I'm Gail Hunt, and I'm excited to bring you Fun Time with Cliff Goodwin, a rock and talk series of Cliff's Tales from the Road, a behind-the-scenes look at his rock and roll adventures right here at WCUW. This week we're going to hear from Cliff about what it's like to be all over the world.
Culturally, every country, certainly every country, has its own nuances, if you will. For example, when we found out that we were in Australia when Up Where We Belong went to number one, me and our keyboard player, Larry Marshall, who's not with us anymore, a fantastic guy, and Joe were in an Abbo bar. We didn't know it. Aborigines?
Oh, no.
In Australia. And Joe's going, you know, hey, we're number one. And I can honestly tell you that the Aborigines in that bar could care less. Because we're in Australia. As far away from us as you can get. If you walked out your front door right now, I think I've mentioned this to you, and you turn left and I turn right, we would eventually meet in Australia. It's 12 hours ahead the day before. They could care less in that bar. If Joe made number one. Now, you know, obviously people did eventually. That was very nice, but it was really kind of funny. It was like, so? Yeah. Talk about cultures and just the way, I mean, like, you want to talk about feeling like you're on another planet. Japan is like another planet. You know, when you go to Europe, we all, most of us in America, took a Latin-based language, either French or certainly Spanish now, or Italian. They're kissing cousins, without a doubt. But in Japan, Japanese is Japanese. There's nothing that looks familiar. Absolutely not. And their culture is incredibly based on respect and place. You know, like I would now, if I'm walking into a restaurant or whatever, I would hold the door for the person behind me, be it a woman or a man. I'd hold the door for them. If there's a guy whose job is to hold that door, you don't do that. You let him do it because you're going to insult him if you do it. There's none of this. It's his job, and you just insulted him by doing his job for him, even if you meant the best thing. But I remember walking around the streets of Tokyo, and there's these vending machines, at least back then there were, that sold Sapporo beer. But they vended in like small kegs that were about as big as a football and a half. And you put 900 yen in it and you press a button and it, this amazing guttural sound, and it spit out this gigantic keg. Remember walking back to the hotel, and I see our road crew, Rod Libby and Jim Skiathiatis, and they both got like a keg each under their arm. And I'm thinking to myself, this is not going to end well, right? Because they're going back to the hotel to commune with those kegs. Again, you know, the cultures, getting back to that story about U2 at that festival, like we went on like midnight, you know, the sun is still up, looking over a sea of blondes. Everybody was blonde. It was otherworldly. And you look at your watch and it's like, 12:30 p.m. and the sun is up. It's not dark. You wonder like what happens in the other side of the year when it's totally dark. What do these people do? Where do they go to not commit Harry Carey? I don't know. You know, it's but every country had its own. I mean, Italy, my favorite place in the world, in the world is Sicily. Nice. The food, the weather, the just fantastic people. And of course the UK, you look at the countryside of the UK and you say, well, I can see why they were the empire.
Nice. And how about touring in America? Was it a lot of different cultural things?
America is truly the best country in the world, but because we're so new and really haven't had to pay our dues, look at what's happened over the last so many centuries in Europe. They've been squashed and blown up and squashed and blown up and came back and came back and squashed and blown up and came back. I mean, what's happening in the Ukraine right now is absolutely tragic and horrible. But you mark my words, you know, we'll be gone, but they'll come back. Because they understand the concept of how to live life. I mean, that's one thing that rang through to us as soon as the first time we went to Europe, how as musicians, we had like street creds. So didn't the butcher and the baker and the shoemaker. You know what I mean? The garbage man. They all had street creds. They all had cachet, that they meant something in that society. In America, sometimes not so much. There's a lot of focus on mega billions, which to me is a shame. But that's the upside and downside at the same time of isolation, being separated by all that water on both sides. I remember one time we were living, this is many, many years ago, late 70s again, Newton Square. We had just gotten back from South America, and the first tour we did of South America, and it was absolutely pandemonium. Just it was, the only thing I can liken it to was Beatlemania. Just insane. And I got home, and I'm walking my dog around Newton Square. And there was a guy sitting on the wall over by Newton Square that they used to do. And he said, "Hey, Cliff, how you doing?" "I'm doing pretty good, because I'm feeling pretty good about myself, because I just, you know, was one of the Beatles in South America, you know?" Yeah. Not really, but felt like it for sure. And I'm walking a few more steps, and he goes, this guy on the wall shouts and goes, "Hey, Cliff, you still got that band?" At that point, I went, ooh, you know, yeah. He brings you right down to earth and realize, yeah, okay, buddy, yeah. You know, you think it was really cool and it was for a minute, but don't drink the Kool-Aid because you still got that band. And I remember that vividly. And the cool thing, again, going back to the UK, the British guys, rock stars that we met over the years, everybody, U2 and Clapton and Sting, and you know, to keep going, were very down to earth. Very down to earth, as far as I was concerned.
You know, what was Joe like? Was he a buddy to be with on the road?
Yeah, I mean, it was. Joe was an absolute lovely, charming guy. I never saw him cop a diva vibe at all. Period. Yeah. Never. And I came to think that was just him, but I came to understand that sometimes it's what your support people put you in that make you feel uncomfortable. But if you just stay grounded, it's much better. Like even to this day, playing guitar is dots and spaces.
I heard a rumor that he gave you a shepherd's pie recipe.
He did. Yeah. We have it every, is it Christmas Eve? I don't even remember. It's Christmas Eve. It's not Thanksgiving. It's Christmas Eve. Yeah, well, it was his mother's recipe. Sometimes we just talk about recipes. Talk about, because we love, he turned me on to Indian food. And I really love Indian food. I wish there was a place I could get really good Indian food in Worcester. There may be right now, but I don't know about it. There was, every now and then an Indian restaurant pops up and then it goes away. So he turned me on to Indian food because you could imagine, right? It's just got incredible character and incredible spices and really exciting to eat, you know, as long as you don't make it too. I remember one time we were in London. I was with Howie Hirsch and he asked the guy to make it hot. He had a vindaloo and he asked the Indian guy in the restaurant to make it hot. And the guy went, "Do you want it hot?" And Howie said, "As hot as you can make it." And the guy went, "Are you sure?" And he said, "Yes." So we had the meal, and Howie brought home leftovers. And he had it in like a big a styrofoam container. And he put it on his windowsill. And in the morning, it had melted through the styrofoam container.
My God.
It had just disintegrated the styrofoam container all over the windowsill. And probably, like it was alien, probably was eating through the floor. But I said, "Howie, was it?" And he said, "It was hot." Yeah, at one point we actually had favorite Indian restaurants throughout the world that we really loved to go to. There was one right in New York City. I don't know if it's still there anymore. It's called Mitali, Mitali. Really special if you're in New York City, listeners.
So your day would be get up, get fed, and then go to a gig, and then...
Well, yeah, you're forgetting the most important thing, the most disruptive thing. Well, you'd get up in London and get fed and then get to Paris somehow. It sounds really luxurious, but you're getting to Paris somehow.
So you're always on the move.
Pretty much. You didn't stay in Very rarely did we stay in one place when we're on tour for more than a day, a day and a half, because you've got to move. If we had, Joe was big enough in Australia where we did 5 days in a venue. So we were there for almost a week. But most of the time it was a day or two in a given city. So you were moving.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to thank Cliff Goodwin for this fun time episode. We look forward to hearing more next week. Tune in to The Drive at 5 and for our Rock and Talk series around 6 p.m.